Varshana is one of the names of Srimati Radharani, which her hometown shares with her. And generically, it means rain. Specifically, it means the shower of grace that flooded Vishvanarpur on this day, right at noon, and eventually spread throughout all of Braj, and finally, by Srila Prabhupada's efforts, to all the world. In the Adi Purana, quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna, O Partha, in all the 14 planetary systems, there's no place so auspicious as the Earth. For there is the town of Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, there's no one so fortunate as the gopis, because in their midst is my Srimati Radharani. And if Krishna had not descended with Radha, then this entire creation, and especially Cupid, the god of love, would be totally useless. Those who practice cultivating gratitude and counting their blessings as a part of their sadhana also look for indications of Krishna's reciprocation in the synchronicities, the serendipities, the coincidences, which are Krishna's means of remaining anonymous in his reciprocation with our efforts. Today I was drawn to a bumper sticker which I've never experienced before. And it said, make this nation grateful again. And I wonder who's practicing the same sadhana as I. And I realized it was Bhakti Andrew, who'd been here before. I just never noticed the bumper sticker before. These are breadcrumbs from the divine leading us on the proper path. Prerequisite to understanding and approaching the topic of Srimati Radharani's birth is considering, contemplating, cultivating some understanding of the nature of love in its pure form, bhakti, prema, mahabhav, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And this is not so much a matter to be grasped by the intellect as it is a matter of opening the heart. Because the mind thinks, but the heart knows. And our attitude is really the fragrance of our hearts. Let us practice gratitude. And it is there, in the heart of every living entity, where along with the Paramatma, who is Krishna's expansion, is the spark of the infinite golden luster of Srimati Radharani's love for Krishna. Enshrined in the heart of every living entity, though locked, concealed, awaiting her gracious glance to unlock and release it. And that glance is attracted by a selfless service attitude, a sacrificing nature, and love for the devotees, whose goal in life is the pleasure of Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, along with a compassionate effort to share the treasure which Srila Prabhupada brought with all the world. Because the world's suffering in darkness. Because we have closed our hearts and shut out the luster that's within them, which originates in Srimati Radharani's love for Krishna. And that dynamic is personified in Srila Prabhupada. The perfection of selfless service, perfect humility, compassion upon all the world, as revealed in his prayers, composed upon Jaladutta, right about this time of year, mid-Atlantic, and continuing as he reached Boston Harbor. The opening stanza, as he's approaching the west, "Oh brothers, you will obtain your good fortune from the Supreme Lord Krishna only when Srimati Radharani becomes pleased with you." And then he shared in his diary how he confided with what he called his companion upon Jaladutta, longing for the days he would be running and frolicking in the pasturing grounds again with Krishna. But then coming to the present moment, praising his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, so dear to the son of Mother Sachi, by whose compassion the holy name will reach every town and village in due course of time. And then Srila Prabhupada explained what is the ultimate pleasure for the Vaishnavas. When that holy name of Krishna enters the hearts of the sinful, miserable living entities and they become joyful in the flood of love of God which Lord Gauranga initiated, and when as an echo that holy name resounds from every town and village, every pasturing ground, mountain, stream, river, ocean, resonating the joy found in that flood of love of God, then the true desires, the true Vaishnava's desires are fulfilled. Then, in all humility, Srila Prabhupada said, I have no ability to fulfill this mission. But Krishna, you're the greatest of mystics. And you can make me able if you like, so make me dance. This is the Brijabasi spirit. Make me dance, make me dance, make me dance according to your desire. And then Srila Prabhupada so surprisingly signs his entry into his diary, "I have no devotion, nor do I have knowledge." That's his humility. But he confessed, "I do have deep faith in the holy name of Krishna." And that was the measure of his success. Character is the quality that is demonstrated in ordeal, which Srila Prabhupada faced on that historic ocean journey. 2 heart attacks in a row, knowing that if a third one occurred, he would surely perish at sea. And then reaching Boston, "My dear Lord Krishna, I don't know why you've brought me to this terrible place, inhabited by, between Boston and New York, inhabited by millions, rich with billions, and determined to stay as it was." And bear in mind, Srila Prabhupada is leaving from Seva Kunj, Madhudama Dharma Dhir, Srila Rupa Goswami's Samadhi, the site of Rasa Lila, to come to the Bowery. This is sacrifice. Srila Rupa Goswami has described love as the emotion which endures and even expands despite so many reasons that it would end. And this culminates in what we observe as Ratha Yatra, which is a recreation of the reunion with the Brijabasis with Krishna after he left them with the assurance that I'll be back either tomorrow or the next day at the latest. And after 100 years, and every reason that in this world we would forfeit a relationship, Krishna changed his name from Vrindavanath, from Gopinath, to Jagannath. And this was not pleasing to the Vrindavasis. He changed his varna from a Gopa to a Kshatriya. He changed his parents from Nanda and Yashoda to Vasudeva and Devaki. And when they reunited, and neither Radha or Krishna could speak in the ecstasy of that reunion, Krishna broke the silence by bowing down at Srimati Radharani's lotus feet and bathing them with his tears. And she was shocked. She said, "Why are you doing this?" "Because I'm a criminal," Srimati Radharani said. "I'm a criminal." And Krishna was so shocked. "What could you mean by that?" And she said that in the absence of you, I continue to live. And this is the testimony that I have no love, and therefore I'm a criminal. We should begin the Sutattva, which may bore some of you, but it's necessary that we take what she says seriously. Devi Krishna Mayi Prakta Radhika Paradevata Sarva Lakshmi Mayi Sarva Kanti Sanmalini Pada Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Supreme Goddess, Srimati Radharani, is the divine feminine counterpart of Lord Sri Krishna. She is the source of all the goddesses of fortune, all the gopis, all the Lakshmis, all the devis. She is the source of all devis. She alone possesses the attractiveness, the beauty to attract the all-attractive Sri Krishna. She is the primeval internal potency of the Lord. She's the embodiment of love, the source of all compassion, and the origin of bhakti, and thereby the only medium by which we can approach Sri Krishna. The topmost mistress catering to the pleasures of Sri Krishna, and as such, the medium transmitting our love to him. And the principle of parampara originates, we say that Lord Nityananda is the original guru, which is true as far as the outer circle in Braj, the four primary rasas, the inner circle being predominated by Srimati herself. And that is expressed in an excerpt from the conversation between Radha and Vrinda. When Vrinda emerges from the groves, like she did this morning, and Radha sees her, she asks, "My dear friend Vrinda, from where are you coming?" She points to the north, from Radhakund. "From the lotus feet of Krishna." "I'm coming from the lotus feet of Krishna," she responded. "Well, where is he?" "On the shore of Radhakund." "What's he doing?" "He is dancing." "Who's his teacher?" And then Vrindadevi replies to Radha, "Your image, revealing herself in every tree, in every creeper, in every bird, in every beast, in every nook and corner, every aspect of Vrindavan, your image is serving as his dancing teacher. And he is dancing behind." She's the Adi Guru in terms of Madhurya Ras. And this is important to understand, because in the process of bhakti, as our praise and devotion and prayers rise in parampara, beginning with our offering to our own Guru Maharaj, that offering is enhanced by the bhakti of all the previous acharyas, ascending ultimately to Lord Nityananda, to Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. And in reciprocation, when the grace descends, enhanced by the realization of all the previous acharyas, our devotion is so much magnified in this spiritual dynamic of parampara. Krishna appeared from the dynasty of the moon. And Srila Rupa Goswami explains that in the dynasty of the sun, who is King Vrishabhanu, a full moon has arisen. And this is important, because even in this world, you see that solar energy is powerful, potentially burning. Without the cooling, soothing rays of the moon, which convert that powerful solar energy into nurturing grace, which is essential for agriculture and essential for our hearts and the cultivating of our own Bhaktilata Bija. So in that dynasty of the sun, where Surya Bhanu is Vrishabhanu. Vrishabhanu means the astrological configuration where the suns of the rays are most potent. In that dynasty, the full moon has arisen. Going back a generation, in Raval, the king Mahabhanu had five sons who were all great Vajarshis, who selected Vrishabhanu to be the successor. In that, King Vrishabhanu, in his ontological, depending on how you look at it, is King Vrishabhanu Surya or is Surya Vrishabhanu? Works both ways. Anyway, when Surya worshipped Krishna with the desire to attain Gokuleshwari as his daughter, the Lord agreed to fulfill his desire. And Bhanu became Vrishabhanu, who married a gopi named Kirtida, and everyone in their kingdom was so happy to have the perfect king and queen who had such parental affection for all their subjects, not only humans and cows, but the whole natural order. King Rishabhanu and Kirtita loved as their children. And everyone was so satisfied in that protection. But similar or parallel to the story of Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda, King Rishabhanu and Kirtita, even into old age, way beyond childbearing time, they had no offspring. And this was like a cloud covering the brilliance and the luster of their love. They tried to conceive through endless yagyas and charities and pilgrimages and sacrifices, archana, until Kirtita, you know, sometimes females are a little bit more intuitive than men, she suggested, worship Katyayani, which Rishabhanu did at the foot of Govardhan on the shore of the Jamuna, performing austerities for a long time, praying to Katyayani, until he heard her voice vibrating, "O son, accept the holy name properly, and all your desires will be fulfilled." He went to the ashram of Kratumuni on Govardhan, where he received initiation into chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, which he did consistently until Goddess Katyayani appeared to him in person and asked, "What is the benediction you desire?" And he said, "Seeing you, all my desires are fulfilled. And you know my heart, and if you see something deeper, you can fulfill that as well." That fulfillment came when King Rishabhanu was plowing the field. Now there's many versions of the appearance of Srimati Radharani, depending on what the rasa, the dynamic, the age, the kalpa in which it occurred. And for those of us here in the plow department of New Vrindavan, we were so delighted that Srila Prabhupada shows the version of her appearance in the furrow as her father plowed the field. Archetype for the plow department and the sacrament of the plow, the agency of Balaram, which opens the field, it opens our heart to receive the bhakti lata bija, which in time emerges and grows. So today, at noon, in the furrow, to the king, in his old age, who yet had no daughter, he brought their baby home and told Kirtita, "Look what I found in the furrow." Exactly the way Sita appeared. Sita means furrow. It means the womb of the earth. Because just as Krishna appears through the agency of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Srimati Radharani appears through her own expansion, the earth, in the furrow. But yet the joy was short-lived when they realized that this girl is as unresponsive as was Balaram before Krishna was born. She appeared to be, and I hate to say these words, but it's quite accurate, deaf, dumb, and blind. Meanwhile, in Upper Golok, Narada Muni was wandering through the villages and groves, and he observed that all the pastimes were extremely pale. And he concluded that Krishna must have descended with Radha. So Narada came to Gokul, to the palace of Nanda Maharaj, and he saw the Lord of his life in the son of Mother Jashoda. And he told Nanda Maharaj that you are so special and blessed because the devotees will forever take great pleasure in hearing and chanting the pastimes of your child. But then he was very eager, because what is the use of the energetic source without energy? So Narada understood that Radha must have appeared in the house of a gopa nearby, so he was going to all the houses. Imagine how enlivened everyone was to receive Narada Muni in their homes. But he had one mission on his mind. He was preoccupied. And he came to the palace of King Vrishabhanu. And he asked him, "Do you have any children?" I mean, after the formalities were properly concluded, "Do you have any children?" And King Vrishabhanu brought out Sri Dhamma, Srimati Radharani's older brother. And Narada was so ecstatic seeing all divine qualities embodied in this boy. And he told King Vrishabhanu that your son will be the best friend of Krishna and Balaram. He will play with him day and night, so take good care of him. And yet he was a little disappointed. "This is your only child?" And King Vrishabhanu didn't want to admit it first, but finally he confided, "I have a daughter as well, but she appears to be deaf, dumb, and blind, totally unresponsive to anything in this world." And he said, "Let me see her." So they brought out the baby Radha and beseeched Narada Muni, "Can you, by your blessings, make her normal?" So Narada Muni took baby Radha in his lap, and he too became momentarily deaf, dumb, and blind, overwhelmed with an emotion of love that Narada Muni had never experienced before. He was so stunned. And he told King Vrishabhanu, "I travel everywhere in creation. I've seen the beauty of Parvati, which can't touch the beauty of this girl. I've seen Lakshmi Devi, Mohini, Saraswati, who can't compare to the shadow of this girl. And simply seeing her, I'm feeling such ecstatic love for Krishna that I need to spend time alone with her." So Narada Muni took baby into a private room where he could glorify her according to his heart's content, without disrupting the parental bhav of Vrishabhanu and Kirtida. And he was thinking in his mind that if this baby can make me stunned with ecstatic love for Krishna, what might her Kaishori form be like? And that desire was instantly fulfilled. Kaishori appeared with her sakis, and Narada Muni once again fell deaf, dumb, and blind, being overwhelmed by the beauty and wonder of this revelation. And when he was stunned, motionless, senseless externally, the gopis took Radha's Charnamrita, sprinkled it upon his head, and then Narada Muni began to sing the most ecstatic, spontaneous bhajan that attracted King Vrishabhanu to enter the room and said, "Why are you glorifying my daughter like this? my little baby daughter. Why are you, Narada Muni, glorifying her in such ecstasy? And he touched the hand of the king and said, summarily, as we would say in the West, all is well with my soul. And then he departed. No, before he departed, he revealed the secret, how to awaken her senses, which are now dormant. He said, all you have to do is hold a festival. That's all you have to do. Implied in that message is, first invitation will go to Nanda Yashoda. So, they announced the festival. Nanda and Yashoda arrived, and when Mother Yashoda saw baby Radha for the first time, she just put Krishna down on the floor and took Radha in her lap. And then Krishna began to cry. She picked him up and held him in her lap beside little Radha. And when that fragrance of her Lord entered her nostrils, she reached out like babies do. They each reach out and touched each other. When she touched his hand, she opened her eyes and she began to sing so sweetly. And everyone was overjoyed. She is no longer deaf, dumb, and blind. She is very responsive now. And the reason for that was her condition for coming to this world. You know, Krishna told her that I'm going to descend. And she said, well, I have to go with you, but I have certain conditions. First of all, I can't live in a place where there's no Vrindavan forest, no shade of Govardhan, no flow of Jamuna. I said, well, look down, they're already there. She looked down, sure enough, they were awaiting. The other condition is that the first person they see has to be you. And he agreed. And it was fulfilled. And her vision was restored. So, Braj Leela can't progress without repeated appearances of Dravasa Muni, which is not alluding to any particular person in this assembly. And even if it was, it should be taken as the highest compliment. I've noticed that people have mixed feelings about Dravasa Muni. He appeared to fulfill Mother Yashoda's desire. Mother Yashoda has had an impossible desire that Srimati Radharani become her daughter-in-law. And she was so tricked by maternal affection that she was oblivious to Krishna's preference for Parakya Ras. Why? Because of the spontaneous, it's nourished by the spontaneous ingenuity ever expanding to overcome the obstacles placed by relatives. So, that's when Dravasa Muni appeared. And, you know, most of you know the story. Too long to delve into today, but the culmination was he blessed little Radha, just a little child, that whatever you cook will be sweeter than nectar, and whoever tastes it will become powerful, invulnerable to obstacles, and live a long life. Because of that benediction, Mother Yashoda requested that Radha, both as a child and even later when she was married, she would come cook. Or she'd cook at home and send it with Dhanishta. But at this time she would go to Nandagram every day on the bank of Pavan Sarovara. She would cook for Krishna. And there, you can see the nature of King Vrishabhana's parental affection. He built a moon tower on the bank of Avansarovara. For the external purpose that his daughter would have a place to change her clothes and take a nap after she bathes in that kund. But you don't need a tower to change your clothes and take a nap. Why did he build her a tower? So she could spy on Krishna. Anywhere he tried to hide in Nandagram, she could see him. Because of the mystic powers inherent to this moon tower. And he also knew he was being spied on. And that drew him to the moon tower, where they enjoyed many blissful childhood pastimes. So Mother Jashoda was so pleased with little Radha that when she came to offer obeisances like she did every day, Mother Jashoda would stroke her hair, and then she like drew her with her arm to her side. And then when the golden form of little Radha, which is soft as butter to Mother Jashoda's touch, her touch made Mother Jashoda overwhelmed with a flavor of love that she had never known before. And she began contemplating, who but this little Radha has virtues which complement my son's every trait? And then she began dreaming, who but Radha would be suitable to marry my Gopal? So then spontaneously, just oblivious to Krishna's preference for Parakeet above, Mother Jashoda took that haldi, that turmeric, and began rubbing it on Srimati's palms. Now, Srimati at this time, I don't know how old somebody is when they're this big. But she said, do you know what this means? She said, no, Mata. This means you're betrothed to marry my son. Just this big. How old would that be? A couple years old. That's called thinking ahead. This means you're betrothed. And then she was thinking, well, what will my other mother say? And Mother Jashoda said, Kirtika's heart is pure and magnanimous. She'll certainly guide you on the proper course. So, Mother Jashoda told the Narada, so, you know, tell your parents that we should get together and discuss this matter. And Radha, so meek, so humble, told Mother Jashoda that your every wish is my desire. She bowed down at Mother Jashoda's feet and then fluttered down those long stairs descending from Nanda's palace to meet her friends on the way. And she confided. Now, the Lita and Vishaka are with us today because Vishaka was born the same instant as Radha, so it's her birthday as well. So she confided. She showed the Lita and Vishaka her palms that were golden. Vishaka said, this is a predicament that Mother Jashoda has put us in. Because we play in the dust all day, you know. Our freedom will be curtailed by marriage. So Vishaka was apprehensive. And Lalita said, don't worry about it. This is not some indelible dye. Just wash your hands. And then they looked, and there's a beautiful god right before them, with steps going down to the water. So Srimati stepped down the staircase, lifted her skirt to her ankles, stepped in the water, and bent over to wash her hands when she saw her reflection. And this is parallel to Krishna seeing his reflection in the jewels of the pavilion and not of Vrindavan. So when Srimati sees her reflection in the water, she said, maybe I am the proper match for Gopal. Nevertheless, Lalita had told her to wash her hands, so she did. And as she washed her hands, in the circular waves permeated the whole pond, and she's looking at her image while she's washing her hands, so mesmerized in her own beauty. Not the way people in this world are mesmerized by their own beauty, but thinking that I am the proper match for Krishna. And Lalita Vishakha are watching. It didn't take her long to wash her hands, but she mechanically just kept scrubbing and scrubbing and scrubbing. And Lalita Vishakha are watching as the entire pond, and it's a big pond, it turned golden. As it is today, or at least the last time I visited there, Pulipokar, between Varshana and Nandanam. So then Lalita Vishakha were getting fearful that, Radhe, the bhav of your heart has tinged the whole pond golden. And she looked, and it was true. And she looked back at them, I'm not the only golden girl in this village. And Lalita said, yes, but the rest of us have that luster because of prolonged contact with you. Now look what you've done. In washing your hands, you made the whole pond. If anybody sees this, then word's going to get around that you're betrothed. We have to conceal this. So they ran back to Vaishana. But somebody did see it. And they reported it to the king. And when King Vrishabhanu and Kirti had heard that spontaneously Radha and Krishna were betrothed, all they could do is sing and dance, and that kirtan resounded throughout Varshana and drew all the citizens there to join the kirtan, and in ecstasy, because actually King Vrishabhanu is even more opulent than Nanda Maharaj. So to testify that we accept your offer, the offer of your son marrying our daughter, they loaded the best of their jewels and gems and gold on a huge golden tray and sent it by royal courier to Nanda's palace. King Vrishabhanu sent the treasure to Nanda Maharaj to affirm, we accept Mother Jashoda's proposal. And then Jashoda and Nanda were thinking, well, we don't have any kind of wealth like this to reciprocate. So what do we do? But they couldn't think about it right then, because their palace filled with all the citizens, singing and dancing in the ecstasy of the news. So Nanda and Jashoda were very busy hosting so many guests. And when all the guests had been served to their heart's content and went home, they turned back to the golden plate, which was stacked with a high mound of jewels and gems, and it was empty. So there's a thief in Nandagram? Could only be one person. Gopal, did you happen to take the jewels? He said, yes, Mata, yes, Pita, I took them. Because I knew that you were in anxiety, that you didn't have any such wealth to send back. So I saw your servants plowing the field yesterday, awaiting the harvest, and I planted all the jewels and gems in the soil, and the harvest will be of such bounty, and more so the blessings to follow. You'll be so proud of me. Gopal told Nanda Maharaj. Nanda said, my dear boy, it doesn't work like that. You can't plant jewels and gems and rubies and diamonds and pearls the way you do wheat, rye, oats, and rice. And Krishna said, no, it'll work. I'm sure it will. And even if it doesn't, you can take them up and you'll at least have your investment back. So take us to the field. They took it and nothing was growing. He said, see, Krishna. He said, no, no. So he dug up one of the rubies, and then as in his little lotus hand, that ruby quickly grew into a kalpavriksha tree filled with diamonds and pearls and emeralds and sapphires, and it was more than they could even pick. So they replenished what was taken from the golden plate and sent it back to King Vrishabhanu to testify, we accept the proposal. And then there were so many jewels and gems left over, they had to fill ox carts and make a caravan carrying the jewels back to King Vrishabhanu. And everyone was so overjoyed. Now it's confirmed, except for one last detail. That's the blessings of the Guru, which in Braj is Purnamasi. Siksha Guru to everyone. So Nanda Yashoda, Vrishabhanu Kirtita came to Purnamasi, who's a close associate of Vrindadevi in terms of orchestrating the Yoga Maya. They came before Purnamasi and jubilantly told her that our children are... They didn't even think of them as children. They thought that, you know, Radha and Krishna are going to be married. And here's the horoscopes. You're kind of doing the first and last, but here's the horoscope, and Purnamasi looks at their astrological charts and told them that if these children, and I repeat, they are but children, now by this time they couldn't have been more than 6 and 7 years old at most, if these children get married at this time, there's going to be a lot of difficulties. There's going to be a lot of challenge, there's going to be quarrel, and the marriage will not last. It's not that I'm against the principle, and maybe in the future the astrological configurations will shift into something favorable. So we can reconsider when these children reach the right age, we can look at the horoscope again, and I'll even call Gargamuni, chief priest of the Vrishni dynasty, to come from Mathura to double check. But for right now, you better forget this whole thing. So, that was the end of that. Left out one important detail in that story. That when Krishna was looking for a lost cow, he saw the golden pond. He wondered, what is this golden substance? He reached out and touched it. A surge of ecstasy permeated his body. What is that golden substance? It kept going deeper and deeper, until only the peacock feather protruded above the surface, marking the course of his submarine activities. When he came out, he was golden. And it wasn't external, it was indicative of change of heart, because he's in the mood of a gopi, calling out the name of Krishna, asking every tree and creeper and bird and beast, have you seen Krishna? Where is he gone? Now, there was a similar pastime which explained the previous ones, which reveal the mysteries of Chaitanya Lila. It was a full moon night when the rays so illumined the atmosphere that it overwhelmed Srimati Radharani's mood to meet with Krishna. So there's the kalpa vriksha known as Imlita, tamarind tree, actually kalpa vriksha, near Yogapit, where Krishna wanted to experience Radha's treasure of love for him. So they have a special meeting place there. 1,000-petaled lotus. Each petal is a kunj of a sakhi and a manjari. And in the world, that lotus is a temple of Radha and Krishna. And to fulfill Radha's waxing desire to meet with Krishna, being Purnim, full moon night, when the deity is dressed in white, and it's intentional, as you'll find in this pastime, an indication, to fulfill her desire, Sakis and Manjaris dressed her in a swan white sari, and all her ornaments were pearls, and with white cloth they muted her ankle bells so that she could go to Imlita to meet Krishna. Simultaneously, Krishna wanted to meet her, but he had no trouble slipping out of the palace and finding his way to Imlita because he just merges with the shadows and is quite indetectable. But Radha, with such a luminous golden complexion, she is hard to miss in the evening landscape, so she had to avoid all the shadows and stay in the moonlight as to not be detected on her way to meet Krishna. So Krishna got to the Imlita before her. This is the same Imlita in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Lord Gauranga would go to meditate on Krishna and his golden form would turn sapphire. So Krishna's there at Imlita in a kunj. Radha has not arrived. And the separation is burning in his heart. And he's impatient. Every leaf that falls from the tree, he's wondering, is that her? And he runs out. But she's not there. He composed himself by seeing her features in every aspect of Vrindavan. The long, twisting Jamuna with its crisscross waves was her braids. The lotuses on those waves were the flowers decorating her hair. And the fragrance coming off Jamuna was the scent of her tresses. Krishna is becoming more and more immersed in thoughts of Radha until he began spontaneously vibrating her holy name, which caused a surge of ecstasy, making him ponder the words of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna thinking, I can only meditate on someone greater than myself. And who might that be? And as he's chanting Radha's name, he's pondering, how much sweetness is found in that name, I cannot determine. What glory is that in her name, I cannot fathom. And as he's chanting her name, all the birds and the animals, they converge at the entrance to the kunj and are watching, stunned in amazement. And at that time, Srimati Radharani arrived, and when she saw the luster, the golden luster permeating the kunj, and some figure within inside that luster, she thought, this must be some deva awaiting a sylvan goddess. So Krishna saw him here and went to Yogapit. So she headed toward Yogapit, but then she heard her name being vibrated with the same voice that ever resonates within her heart. She said, what is this? She turned back. The animals and birds made a way for her to approach the entrance to the Kunj. She went inside, and in her presence, Krishna came out of his trance, and he was so absorbed in the mood of Radha. I mean, he was so absorbed in the mood of Radha, burning in separation, awaiting the appearance of Krishna at the Kunj, that when he opened his eyes and he saw Radha, he's thinking, he's Radha. So he sees Radha. He said, Who are you? Are you Radha? And she thought it wise at that time not to say anything. She simply smiled graciously and tilted her head and sat down beside him as he's trying to, like an identity crisis. Who am I? I have a form, but what happened to my mind? Finally, she asked him, every form you ever assume has meaning and purpose, and what does this signify, this golden form I just saw? And he explained the mysteries of the upcoming golden avatar. And he explained to her, the mystic influence of your name took possession of me and made me feel as if I was one with you. I was so absorbed in wandering through the myriad ecstasies in your panoramic landscape of your heart that your devotional ecstasies covered my dark complexion with yours. And I assumed and revealed this form, which is forever concealed in the heart of the Vedas. Gaur Avatar is implicit in the Vedas, explicit in the Gaudiya Shastras. So when Radha heard this name, Gauranga, she started chanting, Gauranga, Gauranga, Gauranga. And she felt such pleasure. She told Krishna, when I chant that name, Gauranga, I feel like I'm chanting your name, Krishna. And he said, not only my name, your name as well. The four syllables, Gauranga, are equal to Radha and Krishna, equal and same. So I will come immersed in your heart's mood to distribute Braj Prem to all the world. And she asked him, well, how will you acquire the bhav to know the feelings of my heart? He said, your holy name empowers me to enter your heart and plunder its contents for the purpose of distribution. And then she became angry. If you plunder the love of my heart, then how will I be able to serve you? And he explained this, just like when you offer prasadam to the deity. It doesn't disappear, it comes back enhanced. So by stealing your bhav, it will not be diminished, it will simply expand to all the world. And she, in approaching her man bhav, was determined not to submit. And a lover's quarrel ensued, complete with such witty arguments and false innuendos and confidential truths that so delighted the inhabitants of Vrindavan. This is the first year that this festival is observed anywhere other than Radha's normal favorite place, which is Radha Kund. And this is very meaningful because as Srila Prabhupada's palace is now undergoing renovations, and the gold and dark patterns complement one another, is reminiscent of Radha's other favorite place, which is a secluded garden within the palace walls of her father's palatial complex. King Vrishabhanu's palace is famed for its outstanding architecture and gardens, which are rich with a cheerful ambience, which visitors readily absorbed. And in this setting, the three children of King Vrishabhanu, free of royal attire, expectations, and obligations, would play joyfully with their friends. In contrast to where she lived later in Yavat, where she was always sober and somber. In Rashana, the sounds of laughter embellished with the songs of birds portrays the delightful atmosphere there where she lived as a child. Now, Garuda was becoming aware because, you know, Garuda is the first airmail service who would deliver messages. I mean, sometimes, you know, the messages come by different means, you know, Uddhava. But sometimes, when it has to reach there fast, it's delivered by Garuda. So he actually makes landing. He lands in Braj from time to time, but he can't stay there. But what he was observing all the time is that this child, Krishna, has tremendous powers, like my Lord Narayan. But he was bewildered. Garuda was so bewildered, largely by the intimacy with which Krishna played with Sri Dama, Radha's older brother. And Garuda began to question Krishna's divinity, which he considered it to be a sin, because doubt means we're questioning Krishna's integrity. So Garuda, feeling repentant, and he flew to Braj, and he was flying what you would call in aviation terms a reconnaissance mission. He was trying to hide in the clouds, but also see what's going on below. And the gopas, you know, one of their favorite games is chasing the shadows of birds. So there's this shadow that's huge. And they were speculating, has Garuda come to observe our pastimes? So Garuda was having trouble fathoming even the depth of love between Krishna and Sri Dama that the gopas couldn't understand. You know, the gopas one day, they teamed up on Sri Dama, and she said, what you're doing is not right. We can't accept your behavior. Because you keep beating Krishna in wrestling, obliging him to carry you, but you're forgetting. He's a prince. He's very delicate. He's very frail. And you're making him carry you like a horse as he rides upon your shoulders. If you don't stop this, we're not going to play with you anymore. So they shunned him. And Sri Dama, heartbroken, he went over to the other side of the Kund and he was crying with his hands, with his face in his hands and his eyes closed. He's crying. And then he felt a touch on his shoulder that filled him with ecstasy. And he opened his eyes and Krishna told him, you know, they're saying that I shouldn't carry you because I'm a prince and I'm frail. You're also a prince and you're also very tender. And even if you become heavier than Mount Sumeru, I will always find pleasure in carrying you. Because carrying you to me is as delightful as holding and sharing the beauty and fragrance of a very special celestial flower. So Garuda is watching all this and thinking, Krishna is very powerful, like Narayana, but the intimacy of these dealings, Lord Narayana would never reveal. So Garuda. But finally he concluded that Krishna is in some way related, as Gargamuni said, to Lord Narayana. So Garuda, he landed in front of Krishna and bowed down and said, I'm sorry for doubting your divinity the way I did. How can I atone? And Krishna said, take me for a ride. So he climbed on Garuda's back and they went flying through the sky, and then the gopis are looking, that's definitely Garuda, but who is this passenger? And they got into an argument. Half were saying it's Narayana and the other half were saying it's Krishna. And how could that argument be pacified when to settle the dispute right before the gopas, Krishna assumed his forearm form and Sridhama became Garuda, and Krishna climbed on the back of Sridhama in the form of Garuda, ascended into the sky as they flew in circles around the gopas, waving at them with great joy. And then the gopas never again questioned the way that Sridhama played with Krishna. So, back to Navadvipa, as we've been discussing lately, especially on Balaram's appearance day, the inner significance of Sri Vyas Puja, the first pastime in Lord Nityananda's preaching career, where Srivas Thakur, who was appointed by Mahaprabhu to be the priest, told Lord Nityananda, who at the time was very much in the mood of Balaram, put the garland on Srila Vyasadeva. Yes, yes, yes. Put the garland on Srila Vyas. And Itai said, yes, yes, yes. Put the garland on, yes, yes. And he just stood there holding the garland. Srivas went to Lord Gauranga, your Sripad will not worship Vyas. Mahaprabhu became before Lord Nityananda and told him, put the garland on Vyasadeva. And he said, yes, 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 and put the garland on Mahaprabhu, at which instant he revealed his six-arm form. Of which two hands were empty. And he told Lord Nityananda, give me the plow. And those who were fortunate could see the exchange of the plow. And those who were not so fortunate saw there was definitely some exchange going on there, although they couldn't see what it was. Why did he insist on worshiping Lord Gauranga instead of Srila Vyasadeva? For the treasure concealed within the Vedas, which Veda Vyas may or may not know. Radha Dasyam, the highest aspiration of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. To offer our droplet of bhakti into the ocean of her devotion. To have it counted and integrated with her love as an offering to Krishna. So that our lives can find purpose and meaning in bringing him a significant joy. The bhakti, the prem, the mahabhav of Radha, like the dham who portrays it, or the sunshine who symbolizes it, is ever expanding and infinite, and the implications are profound. One devotee asked Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati one time, how to achieve the ultimate grace of Sri Krishna. And he said, when Srimati Radharani casts her merciful glance and accepts you as her own. And that sentiment was echoed by Srila Prabhupada on Radhastami, where he said, don't offer a flower to Krishna. placed it in the hands of Srimati Radharani with the appeal that please make my offering to Krishna. And she says, you've brought me a flower? Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Vadam Tayam. You'll make bhakta.